Everybody, welcome to the press. It's great to have you with us. We've got three shows for you this week. We're going to start with the Arnold Palmer Invitational. We'll go over everything related to that in the week at Bay Hill for the signature event. We've got another show following up right after this one where we will talk about the Puerto Rico Open, which is the opposite field event this week. On the PGA Tour, we've got two events on the docket. And then we'll have a third show for you tomorrow where we'll go over everything else for the week. So we've got the Blue Bay LPGA on the LPGA Tour, obviously. We've got LIV Golf in Hong Kong for their latest event. We've got the Korn Ferry Tour playing in Chile. We've got the DP World Tour in Johannesburg, South Africa. We've got a full slate. This is the first week of the year where we actually have a full slate of events on every major tour that we cover in terms of betting odds. We've even got the Champions Tour this week. We'll talk about that a little bit. So that'll be a third show of the week. But let's talk about API and let's get right into it. This is the fourth signature event of the year on the PGA Tour schedule. We're playing this one in Orlando. I was just in Orlando last week on a family golf trip, which is why we didn't do any shows, because you would not have wanted to hear from me talking last week. It was not good, but we had a great time. So this week, we're back in Orlando, well, the PGA Tour is, and I'm not, for the Arnold Palmer Invitational. They play this at Bay Hill Club and Lodge in Orlando, Florida. I was on the opposite side of town, actually. This is a little bit closer toward like the Dr. Phillips area, if you know Orlando a little bit. I was more toward Champions. We played Champions game for the most of it. But if you know that area, that's where we were last week. The graphics were always, it didn't open in 2016. It opened in like 1969. Arnold Palmer bought this. That's why it's Arnold Palmer's Bay Hill Club and Lodge, because he liked spending so much time in Orlando when he was not in La Trobe. Wound up buying it. This is a Dick Wilson and Joe Lee course. Dick Wilson did the original version of the Blue Monster, which was then renovated by Gil Hance once Donald Trump had bought it. And then Joe Lee is the guy who helped him on this. He did all of the Walt Disney World courses, has done a number of courses, but did a lot of work in Florida. So this is their work. And Arnold Palmer has made some changes over the years when he was alive, but this is predominantly their course. And it's par 72. That's flip-flopped and changed over the years. It's been par 70 for a little while. Went back to par 72 once the scoring kind of got out of hand in relationship to par, and there was kind of an uproar about that. And this golf course is 7,466 yards, so it's exactly 30 yards longer than the last time we did a show for the Mexico Open at Vedanta World. $20 million for purse, $4 million to the winner, 700 FedEx Cup points to the champion. Again, remember, this is a player-hosted signature event, so this does have a cut to the top 50 in ties and any player within 10 shots of the lead after two rounds. Keep that in mind this week when you're making your picks. There is going to be a cut. So if you're making derivative bets, 5, 10s, 20s, you're probably not going to find any kind of 40 worth betting. But 5, 10s, and 20s, you got to know there is the possibility of a cut. So you get a little bit of juice on that, knowing that that's out there. This golf course is typically set up to be extremely difficult, because toward the end of Arnold Palmer's life, he kind of grew upset with the USGA, frankly, that they didn't toughen up courses enough for players competing. So what he wanted to do was use API as a way of showing that deep rough, narrower fairways, really firm and fast greens could make these guys sweat bullets. And that's typically what it does. This golf course typically plays very firm and fast. Last week when I was in Orlando, there was not a single drop of rain, and the golf courses are pretty dry. A couple of the places that we played had greens that were extremely fast, and they are typically not so fast. I would expect it, and obviously they've got a different kind of staff, different kind of budget at Bay Hill and the PGA Tour, but I would expect to see some very firm and very fast conditions from the get-go this week. There is a critical change on the golf course that we want to talk about here. On the 17th hole, it's par 3. Forever, there was a beach bunker that guarded the front of the green. Long beach bunker, probably 15, 20 yards long, where if you came up well short, you were going to wind up in sand if you didn't come up and super chunk it, but you were in a beach bunker and you had a long bunker shot. Many times that was a difficult to negotiate shot because of how firm and fast the greens were. So it's also become a little bit of a maintenance nightmare, I suppose. So they eliminated that entirely and they replaced it with a steeper grass bank. So now there's no bailout in front of the green. If you hit that bank, the odds are it's going to bounce off and go into the water because the ground's going to be firm from new placement, and you're not going to be safe. So this is it's going to make some additional difficulties for the players playing 17 and 18, which are already pretty tough holes. I mean, 16 is a very easy, accessible par five that you can easily eagle if you have a good tee shot. But 17 and 18 are now especially difficult. 18 with the water to the right off the tee shot, if you hit it long enough, but predominantly comes into play on the second shot. That's going to be tricky. Rough around the course is typically pretty deep. Given the conditions of the winter, the dry winter, I don't know if it's going to be especially deep. We'll see about that, but expect firm and fast throughout the entire thing. That all said, let's take a look at the top of the table for this week. Scottie Scheffler has won this tournament two of the last 3 years. He's plus 405. I've seen him plus 450. I saw him plus 450 to start the week. Now plus 405 leads me to believe there are some people putting significant money on the guy to win, trying to get a relatively cheap ticket in a 72-player field. We only have 72. That's the minimum number. So that it's a good thing they went to that 72 number to fill everything out, because otherwise we'd probably be looking at like a 66-player field this week. Rory McIlroy, who has played well here historically, is 17-2 or plus 850. Again, winner already this year at Pebble Beach. Just played TGL last night. I thought he acquitted himself pretty well, even though his team lost. But he has been playing good golf. It's been a good year so far. I think your value starts, though, at 14-1 with Ludvig Åberg, who won at Torrey Pines. I think you can see some similarities between Torrey and here. If you think about Tiger Woods' career, the two places that he won the most, and throw in Akron there, again, another long, narrow, deep, rough setup kind of guy. Torrey, API, Bay Hill. They account for 15 of his 82 PGA Tour wins between them. Important places, the Tiger. So you would think that there's a commonality between those places that should lead you to believe that Ludvig Åberg's game should line up pretty well here, given how well he played at Torrey. Clutched up at the right time, played well down the stretch, knew he needed to make a birdie on the final hole, did it very well, got up, made a two putt from 75 feet, made the Tiger putt to get into the U.S. Open playoff from 2008. I think those are all positive things for Ludvig going into this week. I like him at 14-1. Colin Morikawa, 20-1, has never really played this golf course very well. Justin Thomas, I think, is playing great golf. He's had a consistent year so far. It's hard to wager on him to win. Given the way that he wins and what he wins, this doesn't seem to line up to be one of those things. But a longer golf course does tend to suit him if he can keep it in play. One thing also to keep in mind, you can like guys with weaker short games here, assuming that the rough is playing pretty deep and pretty gnarly. When you have extremes, right? When we talked about this in the Mexico Open, that bad short games didn't matter as much because everyone was chipping off of stuff that was pretty low and tight. Well, you get the same intended effect here, because if the rough is deep, it kind of stymies the creativity that's possible from deep rough. You're hitting a lot of flop shots or just gouge shots. There's not a lot. I'm not saying there's not skill in it, but there's not as much skill in it compared to something that's maybe in between those two. And I think there's more skill hitting off short grass because there's creativity that you can employ, different ways of hitting shots. And you saw it stymie guys like Akshay Bhatia, who was trying to hit low runners from spots that were tight lies on, the par 5 18th at Vedanta World, for example. But really, he could have been hitting open face flop chop floppers, is what I kind of call them. But he didn't do that. And you saw him get bad results multiple times because he didn't feel comfortable executing the shot. I think there's a certain comfort level in playing deep rough, knowing it's luck anyway. So I think that's helpful as we go down this list. Tommy Fleetwood, 25-1. Xander Schauffele's 25-1. We haven't seen him in quite a while. Obviously saw him at TGL last night. Looked pretty good. Made some putts. I don't really know what you could take from TGL. I don't really think you could take all that much. But he looked comfortable, looked healthy. I think that's a good thing. Doesn't have a great record here. Cantlay, 28-1. Hideki, 30-1. I like quite a bit. Again, trying to make the comparison between Torrey and here. He's never had a ton of success on this golf course, but I think he's playing very well. Russell Henley at 40-1, I like quite a bit. He plays this golf course fairly well. Again, not incredibly well, but fairly well, and has had a good run to start the season. Had a good run at PGA National. Shane Lowry, 45-1, disappointed me last week at the Cognizant Classic. That was a bummer. I liked his chances there. Sun Jian, 45-1, mixed record here. Again, short game is kind of his wizardry, so you're taking that out of his hands a little bit. Same with Shane Lowry to a degree this week. Sam Burns is 50-1. We're on Bermuda, so you got to start thinking about him a little bit more. I'm not ready to lock in on him. Keegan Bradley is a guy you're not going to see in the slide later for Horses for Courses. He should be on that slide. He does have a pretty good tournament record. It was kind of on the flim-flam of whether I'm going to put him on that or not. But at 55-1, I find his odds very attractive this week. Math McNeely, Sepp Straka, 60-1. I find their odds quite attractive this week. Straka's played well all year. West Coast, East Coast, you name the surface, he's played well. Go low, go not quite as low. I mean, PGA National was kind of a joke with no win, no real issues. But he's played well pretty much across the board this year. I think he's a guy to look at this week just on that basis. Same with Matt McNeely. I mean, I'm not expecting him to come out and go win a signature event, but I wasn't expecting him to nearly win the last signature event. He is playing great golf. He's had a couple of top eight finishes this year. Three of his six starts or five starts are really, really good. The others are just fine. They're totally fine. I think that prices him very well at a 60-1 for a guy who got close to winning last time out, played extremely well to open the year at Century. He's kind of starting to get to a point where he's starting to experience the schedule in a different way than he has previously throughout his PGA Tour career. So far, the results have been good. I'm willing to like that here this week. Taylor Pendrith, Victor Hovland, going to be a pass for me. Tony Finau, I liked what he did at Torrey Pines. For whatever reason, doesn't carry as well over here. It seems like he's more of a West Coast player than a Titan long course player. But maybe someone to keep in mind when we're thinking about live betting scenarios. Zalatoris, it's hard to really get behind him. His short game's not great. His putting's not great. But the ball striking's pretty good, obviously. That's what keeps him going. He has a decent record here, a couple of top 15 finishes, so maybe that wants to buoy your hopes. I just like to see it as more like 75 or 80-1 before I got any kind of interest in betting him here this week. Let's look at the modeled top 10 for the week. We make this available in full to our members at golfnewsnet.com. You can join for $40 for 1 year, $70 for 2 years, $100 for 3 years over at golfnewsnet.com. But we make the top 10 available for free. I don't think this is going to surprise anybody a whole lot, but Scottie Scheffler's number one. Xander Schauffele's number two. Rory McIlroy's number three. Deki Matsuyama, four. Patrick Cantlay, five. Again, kind of taking all those guys in totality. Remember, we have a two-year window for the longer-term parts of this model. One-year window for another part. Last 10 events. Three-year history of this tournament. And then how you play against relative competition in those 1 and 2 year windows. So this is a longer-term view of these players' ability. And that, I think that speaks pretty well to who 1, 2, and 3 in the world are, what Hideki Matsuyama has been able to do consistently over the last couple of years. Same thing with Patrick Cantlay. Maybe the results aren't quite as good. He's starting to kind of get back there, I think. I don't like him at this golf course, but he's starting to get back there. And then Ludvig Åberg really starting to kind of come to his prime. I would be not surprised if he winds up in the top 3 or 4 of these rankings in signature events as we get to, and the major championships as we get toward the later part of the year. Finau, Colin Morikawa, Wyndham Clark, Tommy Fleetwood. I don't think any of those are particularly shocking to anybody. Wyndham Clark is always interesting to me because his high and low, the ceiling and the floor, are so different. So different. Where he could be great, and I think he's really come alive with the TGL stuff. Seems to really enjoy that. He's played well at times. But his floor is just atrociously bad. And somehow still ninth. So that tells you something. About maybe the at least the potential for him to play. I think he should like this golf course because he is long off the tee, because a lot of people are going to find the rough, because he is wayward off the tee. He might be an interesting play. I do not just bet Wyndham Clark as principal, but he is an interesting play for that reason, because if everyone's going to be in the rough, he's going to be out there about as long as anybody else. So maybe worth considering. To that end, people are going to want to bet Aldris Potgieter this week, because of the same idea. Longest hitter on the PGA Tour. If you're going to be in the rough, you might as well be out there. Short game effects, I think, are bigger here than they were at Vedanta World. There could be some validity to this. I'm not telling you he's going to win, but we'll talk about that when we get to the odds. I think it's interesting. Horses for courses. Obviously, Scottie Scheffler leads the way. Won 2 of the last 3. Defending champion here. Obviously likes the place. Playing his way into form, played pretty well at Torrey. He said he's frustrated about his game. He's had a few weeks to work on it. I would expect those net results to be good. Rory McIlroy's a horse-for-course player for sure this week. Matt Fitzpatrick is. Both those guys have great records in this tournament. Max Homa has a good record here. Obviously, I am about as far away from betting Max Homa as I've ever been in my entire life, given the other struggles that he's had, the equipment transition, the results of the last year. A lot of stuff is not good, and it's not worth taking that flyer on him. So I want to put him on the screen, but the reality is he's unbettable for me. Zalatoris, same thing. I mean, I really like his game in parts, but the parts that I don't like, I can't stand. And that makes it really hard for me to bet him. I know a lot of people like betting him on the hope that he maybe has a good putting week or a good inside 40 yards week. I can understand why you would think about that here, given everything we've already said about the deep rough and the greens. This is going to be a challenge for everybody putting-wise, too. I mean, these greens, I played Bay Hill probably 15 years ago. It's been a long time now, but the golf course demands a lot of you on those putting surfaces. A lot of sections, big putting surfaces. You find yourself with a lot of 40, 50-foot putts that are not easy to negotiate. A lot of ups and downs, a lot of curl. Not especially grainy as putting surfaces go, but because they are firm and because they are fast, they get your attention extremely quickly. Again, we've talked about past champions. Scottie Scheffler, two of the last three. Interestingly enough, two LIV guys on here in that span, having Bryson DeChambeau and Tyrrell Hatton in there. We'll talk about this a little bit later on, too, off the first, the idea of players coming back to the PGA Tour. But those two guys might be back on the PGA Tour sooner than you think. Again, Kirk Kitayama in there, long hitter, not the best short game, but a long hitter. So long hitter, long hitter, long hitter, long hitter. Tyrrell Hatton, fairly long. You want to be a bomber here. I mean, let's just be plain and simple about it. To that end, I want to talk a little bit about, and this isn't a slide or anything, so we'll keep this up, but for our members at golfnewsnet.com, just to give you a preview a little bit. So we have our long-term model, right? We talk about our top 10 players every week, and that's great and all. But we also talk about short-term form, because sometimes players catch heat, and they're playing extremely well. And we want to point that out, too, because that's where sometimes winners come from, right? And that is a totally valid thing to talk about. So we want to put up the slide comparing the model top 10 with our short form top 10. So guys that are playing well, what we use for this is players that are gaining 1.2 strokes or better per round in total on average in the last 10 PGA Tour events played. Players who are gaining on the approach at least 0.6 strokes per round on average in those events, and then a quality strokes gain score of 1.5 strokes per round or better in that 10-event stretch, last 10 events played. Obviously, we've got a shorter field here, so you have shorter numbers, but typically we're looking at kind of like 10 guys who are playing above average golf in that total category. And then the approach category, there are fewer players because the reality is players gain strokes in different ways, and some do it massively off the tee, some have good putting weeks. All that kind of variance happens. The quality strokes gain, we're really looking at how you're playing against the quality of your competition. So I'll give you an example. Aldrich Potgieter qualifies under the strokes gain total, just barely 1.203 over the last 10 tournaments played. But if you look at his quality strokes gain, that's 0.707 because his strokes gain is really coming against poor competition for the most part compared to the players on this list. So starting at the top, quality or total player, total strokes gain. Rory McIlroy, Colin Morikawa, Scottie Scheffler, Hideki Matsuyama, Matt McNeely, Tommy Fleetwood, Michael Kim, Daniel Berger, Justin Thomas, Sepp Straka, and Brian Campbell. Campbell makes sense. He's won and really hasn't done a whole lot of anything else. Guys, in terms of approach play, your best approach players, and we do have some guys that don't qualify for the total strokes gained, but do qualify under the approach. So Colin Morikawa, Scottie Scheffler, this is no particular order. Hideki Matsuyama, Matt McNeely, Tommy Fleetwood's number one on that list, 1.19. I mean, he is playing great on the approach. Justin Thomas, Nick Taylor, who won this year, Ludvig Åberg, J.J. Spaun, and Adam Scott, which I think Adam Scott's kind of an interesting one. And in terms of quality strokes gained, a lot of the same guys between total and quality stroke gained. Are you playing good competition? Rory McIlroy, Colin Morikawa, Scottie Scheffler, Hideki Matsuyama, Matt McNeely, Tommy Fleetwood. Guys playing great golf. And if you're looking for kind of any warning signs from players here, I mean, I think you want to look at strokes gained off the tee this week because that's going to tell you a lot of things, right? Strokes gained off the tee numbers in those last 10 events, McIlroy, Potgieter, Taylor Pendrith, which is going to get a lot of bet this week, I think. And I think that's worth it. I have a ticket for him to win the U.S. Open. I like him here this week for that reason. Again, don't love the putting numbers, minus 0.5 strokes per round. But you get some benefit here this week because the putting surfaces are extremely difficult. Tom Dietrich, Sam Burns, Isaiah Salinda, Bob McIntyre, Daniel Berger. I mean, a lot of the usual suspects that I think you're going to see here on this list. So I wanted to kind of bring out some of those short-term guys to just get you on your mind a little bit, but also want to talk about a couple of guys that are just having good runs recently. Again, tools available for our members, how you play in the last five tournaments on the PGA Tour. We're looking for top 15 finishes. Daniel Berger's got a couple, obviously, has played very well. He should have been in the top 15 at PGA National. Should have had three of them, but just did not have a good enough weekend. Tony Finau's played well recently between Genesis and Pebble Beach. I wouldn't be surprised to see that continue. Ben Griffin playing well. He's been playing pretty much every week. He's got a couple of fourth-place finishes. We're going to talk about him here in a little bit. Russell Henley, a fifth and a sixth. Pebble and Honda, someone to look at. Michael Kim has been fantastic. I don't think he's a threat to win this tournament whatsoever, but he's played the best golf of his PGA Tour career. Minwoo Lee's played well the last two times out between the Phoenix Open and Honda Classic. Two very different golf courses, and he's been playing well. Looked good on TGL, by the way. Shane Lowry's playing well, a couple of those. Top 15 finishes. Matt McNealy, obviously a runner-up at a T9 at Phoenix. Andrew Novak's in the field, a couple 13th place finishes recently. Got him out of Puerto Rico to get here this week. Jordan Spieth is not in the field, but playing better. Sepp Straka playing great, 11, 7, 15 in three of the last five events played. So there are a number of players that are worth looking at here that are playing well in the short term, although this model on this graphic looks at the longer term. Now I want to go through the rest of the field here this week in terms of full field odds, and we'll run through all those, some guys just to kind of like and maybe hang on to. We mentioned Wyndham Clark, 65-1. Daniel Berger, 70-1. I think those guys are both worth a look. I really love Minwoo Lee here this week. Hits the crap out the ball. Seems to be generating a lot of confidence. I do like Ben Griffin at 75-1. I don't think he's long enough for this golf course, but the results are phenomenal, and it's happening everywhere. So maybe he's heading into one. I do like J.J. Spawn's been playing well. Again, I don't love the length question here, but he has done pretty well on courses of similar length. I think about TPC San Antonio, totally different challenge, but similar length. Adam Scott popped pretty well. I think he's having a good time doing TGL. He is obviously a great ball striker, bad putter. Bad putter, not such a bad thing here. Bad short game, not such a bad thing here. I don't think that's worth overlooking. Matt Fitzpatrick's 91, great record overall. Not playing the best last year and a half, right? I mean, basically since winning the U.S. Open. Just not as good. Michael Kim's 100-1. Why would I take him when I can get Fitzpatrick or Scott at 90? You know, I like Michael Kim's game a lot, but not enough to be $10 worse than what you're getting for those guys who have obviously accomplished a heck of a lot. And then I want to pull up a couple of longer shots even than that. Harris English, 125-1, is really intriguing to me. He's played well here in the past, well enough at least to get on my radar. He obviously has won this year. Length is a question, of course, but the ball striking is very good. Nick Taylor, 125-1, I think is at least worth a consideration. He can win in these bigger fields. He wins out of nowhere. Length is your concern there. There's going to be a lot of people, I think, on JT Poston. Potgieter is still interesting to me at 150-1, even if it's just a $5 bet, just kind of a cover. Or you may want to look differently to Steven Yeager instead, because he played very well in the Mexico Open, faded on the final day, but played very well. Similar theory of the case. Long hitter. All you got to do is keep it in play. There's water in play here, but if he can just keep it in play, he gives himself a chance. Then go on the other side of this column. Andrew Novak, 185, I think is kind of intriguing. I mean, Max Holm is 225-1. It's not good. It's not bettable. But it is interesting to point out how far he has fallen in 12 months, 14 months. And then just the super long shots here, they get their own special slide because why would you bet any of these guys? But Tom Hoagie at 301. Moderately interesting to me. Everybody else can just kind of pound sand. We've talked a little bit about some kind of first round leader plays over the years. We haven't done it much so far this year in the show, but I did want to look at Arnold Palmer Invitational, strokes gained by round, and wrap up with that before we get out of here for some first round leader plays if you are so inclined. We tried to look at players based on how many total rounds they have, right? So like Sahith Theegala has 6 total rounds in this tournament. He leads the list. Well, that's not in the last 5 years. That's not especially helpful. Bob McIntyre, Nick Dunlap, they've played here once. Like, what does that do for them? But if, among players with experience, those who have played at least twice in full, you got Xander Schauffele, Scotty Scheffler, Brian Harman, Tommy Fleetwood, Shane Lowry, Ben Ahn, Justin Rose, Rory McIlroy, Mac Hughes. Those are some interesting guys to think about for first round leader, given some of their strokes gain profiles on this golf course. Some other guys maybe worth mentioning again with significant experience, throw them in there. McIlroy, Scheffler, Sungjae, Billy Horschel, Henley, Thomas, Zalatoris, Bob McIntyre, Corey Connors, Keegan Bradley. I would consider looking at those guys if you're going to make them first round leader plays this week. That's going to do it for us on the show this week. Thank you so much for spending some time with me talking about the Arnold Palmer Invitational. Again, we're going to do a show literally right after this, but it's our second show of the week. We're going to talk about the Puerto Rico Open, the opposite field event, 132 players in Puerto Rico. It is a total lottery ticket, but it's a fun one to talk about. If you have any questions, get a hold of me, Ryan at thegolfnewsnet.com. I'm on social media at Ryan Ballingy. Join Golf News Net for $40 for 1 year, $70 for 2 years, or $100 for 3 years at thegolfnewsnet.com. And you can watch this show on GNN TV, available on Roku in our app, as well as on Freecast, Free Life Sports, and on YouTube. Thanks so much for spending some time with me, and we will talk to you in the next one.